Shiupa de Shamrita, which in 11 verses takes us from the essentials of controlling, and this is actually a good verse to establish the principles and etiquette of Urjavrata, which means the vows we take for the month of Kartik. Kartik means the daughter of Kirtida or Kirtika, whose daughter then takes on the name Kartika. Karti means the daughter of Kirtida, and the suffix ka means soft-hearted, tender-hearted, therefore Kartik, the presiding deity of the month of Damodar, who is the queen of Damodar's heart. So the first verse of Upadeshamrita establishes principles, not specifically for Kartik, but very appropriate for Kartik. One who can control his speech, vacha vegam, manasa vegam, control his mind, and krodha vegam, the anger and the passions. For this month especially, we should be very attentive that our thoughts, words, deeds, emotions be suited for the pleasure of the presiding deity, Srimati Radharani, who especially graces and blesses this month with her special potency. And the vows we undertake this month are called Urjavrata. Urja means the queen of all Krishna's pastime potencies. And by pleasing her this month, our devotional service will be rejuvenated. So, Srila Rupa Goswami, establishing that principle of proper Vaishnava conduct for all times, and establishing a very appropriate precedent for Kartik, in 11 verses moves to, how do you bring this back to life, Vishen? The highest perfection of life, where he states that Srimati Radharani is certainly the most treasured object of Krishna's love, and in every respect, her divine kund is described by great sages as similarly dear to him. Undoubtedly, Radha Kund is very rarely attained, even by the great devotees. Therefore, she is even more difficult for ordinary devotees to attain. If one simply bathes once within those holy waters, one's pure love of Krishna is fully aroused. Purport by His Divine Grace, Vaisi Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Why is Radha Kund so exalted? Because it belongs to Srimati Radharani, who is the most beloved object of Sri Krishna. Among all the gopis, she is the most beloved. Similarly, her leg, Sri Radha Kund, is also described by great sages as the lake that is as dear to Krishna as is Radha herself. Indeed, Krishna's love for Radhakund and Srimati Radharani is the same in all respects. Radhakund is very rarely attained, even by great personalities fully engaged in devotional service. Not to speak of ordinary devotees who are only engaged in the practice of Vaidhi-bhakti. It is stated that a devotee will at once develop pure love of Krishna in the wake of the gopis if he once takes a bath in Radhakund. Srila Rupa Goswami recommends that even if one cannot live permanently on the banks of Radhakund, he should at least take a bath in the lake as many times as possible. This is a most important item in the execution of devotional service. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes in this connection that Sri Radhakund is the most select place for those interested in advancing their devotional service in the wake of the friends, sakis, and confidential serving maids, manjaris, of Srimati Radharani. Living entities who are eager to return home to the transcendental kingdom of God, Goloka Vrindavan, by means of attaining their spiritual bodies, Siddhadeha, should live at Radhakund, take shelter of the confidential serving maids of Sri Radha, and under their direction engage constantly in her service. This is the most exalted method for those engaged in devotional service, under the protection of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In this connection, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur writes that even great sages and great devotees like Narada and Shanaka Rishi do not receive the opportunity to come to Radhakund to take their baths. What then to speak of ordinary devotees? If by great fortune one attains the opportunity to come to Radhakund and bathe even once, he can develop his love for Krishna exactly as the gopis do. And then it goes on to how one should live on the banks of Radhakund. Now this is a very exalted level of devotional service being described by Srila Prabhupada. Srila Rupa Goswami and Srila Prabhupada elsewhere state that one should choose an eternal resident of Vrindavan whose mood resonates with one's own internal bhav and follow in the footsteps of that great soul. But we should understand that that principle begins after the stage of liberation. So then you might question, why are we even discussing these things? Because even in our neophyte condition, it's important to understand the perfection to which, the siddha, to which we are aligning our sadhana. And to establish the intention to achieve that goal someday, somehow, by the grace of Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Most of us know the story of the appearance of Radhakund, so we'll touch upon that briefly and emphasize more on the mercy of Lord Gauranga and his associates, which has made the achievement described in Upadeshamrita possible, even for neophytes, at least to begin the process and chart their course in alignment with that final destination. The appearance of Radhakund is predicated by another appearance last night, which was Aristasura. Because Keshi and Arista were appointed by Kamsa to spy on Krishna because Kamsa was suspecting that all the mighty Rakshasas, who have inconceivable powers, were one by one coming to Braj and not returning to Kamsa, telling him the news that he wanted to hear, that they had killed Krishna. So Kamsa deputed Keshi and Arista to spy on Krishna and see if he was indeed the one dispatching these mighty Rakshasas to the abode of Yamaraj. And Keshi returned, while searching for Krishna, he saw Srimati Radharani. And he immediately returned to Kamsa and told him that this girl is so beautiful that she should be yours. Much like Sriparnika reporting to Ravana about the beauty of Sita. So Kamsa was ready to invade Braj with all his mighty army. Keshi advised him, why don't you send Shankachura instead to kidnap Radha during Rasalila, which he did, which resulted in his demise. And then Kamsa sent Arista, who arrived last night, to initiate the series of events leading into the appearance of Radhakund. So it was dusk, and Krishna was trying to extinguish the flames in Vishakha's heart, which was threatening to disrupt a well-planned Rasalila, which they have every night during Kartik. When suddenly, looming over the sky, the landscape of Braja, this dark silhouette of a monster whose back loomed high into the sky. It was a bull. Clouds hovering around the hump on his back, and his tail swishing ferociously was stirring the clouds into thunderstorms. So a very peaceful Kartik evening, suddenly threatened by this looming demoniac figure, and thunderstorms, followed by roaring and bellowing and tremors in the earth like an earthquake as he stomped the ground. And then the gopis told Krishna, go investigate and take care of this challenge. So Krishna proceeded, flanked by his bravest of gopas. And he told Arista, because he was already tearing up the fences, destroying the dikes, pawing the ground, making huge pits. And Krishna challenged him, what are you doing? And the cows are having miscarriages, as are the gopis. What are you doing, terrorizing the inhabitants of Braja, when I am here to protect them and destroy miscreants like you? And that infuriated Arista. He began pawing the earth like an angry bull does. And then Krishna slapped his arms, tightened his sash as a declaration of war, which infuriated Arista almost to the max, but to heighten his fury to perfection, Krishna just casually rested his arm and head on Subal's shoulder. And that was too much. Arista lowered his head, pointed his horns straight at Krishna, and Krishna's most fearless gopas all deserted him in the line of fire. As Arista charged, Krishna grabbed him by the horns, stepped him backwards 18 steps, sat him on his rump, which infuriated them all the more. He got up and charged again. Krishna grabbed him, kicked him to the ground, and like a washerman wringing out a wet cloth and also pulling out his horn, clobbering it with him, it appeared that Krishna killed him, but really he didn't, because Yamaraj knew it would not be pleasing to Krishna to have to kill the bull. So Yamaraj invisibly intervened, killed Arista, who was still liberated because he died in the presence of Krishna. Now, what's not known in most of the story is that Krishna took it very seriously that he had killed a bull. So he immediately took his bath in Lalitakund, which holds all the holy waters in all of creation. So he actually did atone. It's important to know before the next series of accusations followed. So there was no Rasalila that night, because when word spread about this wonderful victory, there was celebrations all night in Nandagram as the Brijabasis chanted Krishna's wonderful pastimes of that day. So by this evening, Krishna was more eager than ever for Rasalila. So he called the gopis, each individually, personally by name, with his flute. They assembled near Govardhan, actually right here. And Krishna reached out to take Srimati's hand, and she recoiled. And she said, "Don't touch me, O sinful killer of a bull." He wasn't expecting this kind of reception. So he defended himself. How can you equate my heroic protection of the Brijabasis, including you, with a heinous act of killing a bull? So he thought he cleared himself and reached out again to take her hand, and she slapped him, slapped his hand away. You know, at first he thought she was just being coy, as she is so prone to do, but then he saw that this is serious. "You cannot touch us now because you are contaminated by the sin of killing a bull." So Krishna at this point is becoming somewhat submissive. "What do I have to do?" She said, "You have to travel to all the holy places in creation and take your bath in all the holy waters." Krishna says, "That's absurd. I don't want to do that. I'll just bring them all here." Now, he was still in a chivalrous mood from the night before, so he did something he wouldn't ordinarily do. He stomped the earth hard and with his heel created a large impoundment. And then, like a wizard making this strange gesture as if to summon some unseen object out of midair, he called all the holy places of all those tirthas that he was supposed to visit, and they all started gurgling up from the earth of Brajbhumi, entering his kund and filling it with their holy waters. Then those personified holy places took their human forms, surrounding the kund, chanting Purusha Shukta. Krishna entered the water, took his holy bath, emerged, dressed himself in fine new cloth, and became more arrogant than ever. And he told the gopis, "Now, I am pure, but you cannot associate with me, because you are all contaminated, because you sided with a demon in your accusations against me. But I can correct that. I can offer you atonement by bathing in my pond, in Srimati,
It's feisty. She said, no. I cannot bathe in your kund because it is contaminated because you took your bath there. So we will make our own kund, which will become world-renowned, even more beautiful than yours. And she scoped the surrounding landscape, and she saw that where Arista had pawed up the earth before his charge, he had already begun an impoundment. So she told her Sakis and Manjuris, get to work. And Srimati Radharani, with her own lotus hands, began excavating Radhakund. All the gopis followed suit, but it was too slow for Lalita, so she broke her bangle and used it like a spade. All the gopis followed suit, and in no time they had excavated this impoundment. And feeling very proud of themselves, Krishna responded, that's a beautiful impoundment, but where's the water? You can take water from my lake. No. That water is contaminated. Because you took your bath there. We will bring our own water in billions of golden pots, milk pots, from Manasaganga. They made a bucket brigade. And they actually started filling Radhakund with the water from Manasaganga. But then something happened, very consistent with Damodar Lila and Mother Yashoda. When Krishna saw perspiration on the forehead of his beloved due to her intense effort to fulfill an important pastime for his pleasure, her effort, his grace, which applies to all of us if we want success. It's a combination, our effort and Krishna's grace. So then Krishna summoned from Shyamakund one deity who was the envoy of all the presiding deities of all the holy places who had taken shelter and residence in Shyamakund. And that deity arose, celestial golden personality, out of Shyamakund. And as tears flowed from his eyes and his body trembled in emotion, he fell down at the lotus feet of Srimati Radharani and prayed, O goddess, neither Brahma, the compiler of scripture, nor Lord Shiva, the best of Vaishnavas, nor Lakshmi, can begin to comprehend your glories. Only Krishna himself can partially understand your glories, and therefore he personally worships your lotus feet by adorning them with red lac and ankle bracelets, thinking himself most fortunate for such opportunities. Your beloved Krishna has called us all to take up residence in his kund, to serve him. And although there's no conceivable equal fortune, there is something more yearning in our hearts, which only you can fulfill. And at this point, her feisty mood in these series of pastimes became very, very gentle and motherly. She said, what is it? And he said, if we could enter into your kund and achieve service to you. Glancing at her beloved from the corner of her eyes, and Krishna, yes. And all the Sakis and Manjuris, yes. So she said, please come. The western dike of Shyamakund burst wide open. The waters of Shyamakund flowed into Radhakund, moving in clockwise motion as lotuses of all colors burst into full bloom. And on the shore, kunjas of the Astasakis manifest the most exquisite vernal beauty and burst into bloom. And then Radha and Krishna exchanged their vows. Krishna said, to Radha, that your lake, as you said it would, will surely become more world-renowned than my own. And Radha said, and he said, I'll come there every day to take bath. And then Radha said that I'll come every day to take bath in your kund as well. And I bless, and compare this to the 11th verse of Upadesha Ramachandra, I bless that anyone who bathes in your kund, or resides there, or displays intense devotion for your kund, will become very dear to me, and surely come to me. Their vows exchanged, they began the long-awaited and delayed Rasalila. And that Rasalila was so exceptional because it illumined the entire surrounding forest named Srivan with beauty and wonder and charm that none of the Brijavasis, including Radha and Krishna themselves, had ever seen before. This is Bahulastami, named after that cow who is the emblem of truthfulness. You know the story of Bahula? She was a cow who had a calf, and when she was out grazing, she was approached by a hungry tiger. And he said, I want to eat you. And she asked, can I at least return to my calf and feed him one last time and tell my sisters and my cowherd man my destiny, and then I'll return to you to do with me as you like. So he gave his consent. She left, told her cowherd man and her sisters and her calf of her destiny. And they all said, we're not going to let you go alone. We're all going to go with you. So Bahula returned with her sisters and her calf and her cowherd man. But there was one more person. His name was Gopal. And then when the tiger saw how committed she was to the last leg of religion, the last leg of the cow and the bull, truthfulness, his heart changed and his appetite subsided, and he said, bless you. So that emblem of truthfulness, Bahula, was the cow that Srimati Radharani chose to name the appearance of her own kund after. Now there again, the theology of Radha Kund is esoteric, and will specifically avoid any confidential pastimes. And will repeat that it is important, even in our neophyte sadhana, it's important to understand the nature of the sadhya, the siddha, their perfection, so that our sadhana can be aligned with that goal. And we won't just wander all over the universe like even Krishna didn't want to have to do. The other thing to understand is when Srila Rupa Goswami is emphasizing the importance of living on the shore of Radha Kund and taking bath there, he's referring to an internal meditation more than a physical activity. Because Lord Chaitanya's mission is a preaching movement. And as that instruction came to Srila Prabhupada from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati on the shore of Radha Kund, if you ever get money, print books. Because the pure love of Krishna that Radha Kund embodies can never be divorced from its accompanying dynamic, which is compassion for the souls of this world, and therefore the yearning to share the fortune that we have achieved with the world. One reason why these Sakis and Manjaris cherish Radha Kund and Shyama Kund is because, you know, Sakis, they have similar devotion for Radha and Krishna. Their devotion to Radha and Krishna is as a pair. The Manjaris are different. Their devotion is exclusively to Radha to facilitate her meetings with Krishna. Shyama Kund and Radha Kund are the deities of Radha and Krishna that are never separated. They're always together. Therefore, favorite pastime place for Radha and Krishna and the gopis, because gopis can't even come to Shyama Kund without a gopi escort. And even then, it's only the most confidential of all gopis, like Subal and Sridharma and Arjun and Gandharva, they can even go to the Shyama Kund side. They can't even go to the Radha Kund side. How can we, sadhakas, be seated on the shore of Radha Kund? Because they have appeared not only for the pleasure of Radha and Krishna, but also for the benefit of the world. And they allow sadhakas to derive the benefit of their purifying waters. And on Bahulastami, the only holy bath allowed at midnight, what are we doing? First of all, the manner in which you bathe in Radha Kund should be aligned with the instructions of your spiritual master. Srila Prabhupada forbid bathing in Radha Kund at one time when he saw that the devotees were being frivolous. And he just stopped it. He said, take 3 drops of water reverentially upon your head, bow down and offer your prayers. Because we have to keep foremost in mind that the topics of Radha Kund are something so far above our heads that we can never conceive, and should always maintain the utmost extreme reverence for such topics. Even though Srimati Radharani's first quality is she is sweetness personified, and the sweetness of everything regarding Radha and Krishna may have an intoxifying effect, we have to maintain the sobriety of utmost reverence, lest we fall prey to the most hideous disease of sahaja. And therefore, Lord Chaitanya instructed his foremost disciples, the 6 Goswamis, to describe the science of devotional service to Sanatana Goswami. Mahaprabhu instructed to reveal the science of sadhana bhakti, regulated devotional service, and its relation to spontaneous love. To reveal Krishna Lila both in its manifest and unmanifest forms, as he did in Hari Bhakti Vilas, in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. To Srila Rupa Goswami, Mahaprabhu instructed, reveal the intricacies in the science of rasa through Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And to Raghunath Das Goswami, because he's the acharyas of Sambandha, Abhideya, Prayojana. To Raghunath Das Goswami, The detailed process of how a sadhaka enters into the mellows of Raghunuga Bhakti, spontaneous love, characteristic of Praj. Now, Raghunath Das Goswami had assimilated what Swarup Damodar taught him. Raghunath Das Goswami spent more time in the association of Mahaprabhu than any of the other Goswamis. Both witnessing Mahaprabhu's Leela in Jagannath Puri and hearing from the Bengali devotees when they came for Rath Yatra about Mahaprabhu's childhood pastimes, and personal instruction in the shelter of Swarup Damodar. And Mahaprabhu gave him the instruction when Raghunath Das Goswami asked, "I don't know why I've taken the renounced order of life. What is my mission, my purpose, my duty?" And Mahaprabhu responded with an instruction appropriate for all of us. "Do not speak like people in general and do not hear what they have to say." It means no gramyakata. "Do not expect honor, but offer all respects to others." In other words, be humble. "Always chant the holy name of Krishna. And within your heart, always meditate internally on the pastimes of Radha and Krishna, while acting strictly according to the principles of Vaidhi Bhakti, even on when you attain the Raghunuga stage," which he forever was, Raghunath Das Goswami. But through him, Mahaprabhu is instructing us. And therefore, Kaviraj Goswami, the intimate companion and disciple of Raghunath Das Goswami, described his regulative principles as lines in stone that never varied. He was so strict. He's eternally on the Raghunuga stage, but he's acting so strictly in his sadhana for our benefit. Raghunath Das Goswami, the eternal resident of Radhakund, taught by both literary and practical examples, and he instructed very clearly that to those who think that they can enter into spontaneous love of Krishna without achieving perfection in the regulative principles and Vaishnava conduct, they're an illusion and should take heed of the example of Raghunath Das Goswami. So Raghunath Das Goswami wrote Manasiksha to instruct us how to control the mind. And that is prerequisite for his final work, Shivalapa Kushamanjali, which means a bouquet of lamentations. And there is a form of scripture in all traditions composed of lamentations, which is actually very important, because when we express our lamentations to Krishna, we're both turning to the solution to our lamentations, connecting and bonding with him, as well as hearing our own lamentations from a different perspective. And therefore, we have in Christianity the Psalms of David, which has one whole section, Lamentations, which is tremendously inspiring to Christians to hear. So in Vilapa Kushamanjali, which is a little esoteric, but there again, it's important to understand the nature of this perfection, however far we may be from it. And unless you feel agitated hearing Krishna's pastimes, or question the propriety of him performing these pastimes, we should hear submissively and be very honest about our actual level of achievement. Raghunath Das Goswami, of course, you know, he left Jagannath Puri after the disappearance of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, followed by his object of shelter, Swarup Damodar. Then he took shelter of Gadadhar Pandit, but the fire of separation was burning too fiercely in his heart. And chanting Gauranga, Gauranga, he just entered into Tota Gopinath deity and disappeared. Bereft of the objects of his shelter, thinking that everyone I've clung to, like pillars, they're falling like dominoes. He left Puri for Braja to commit suicide by jumping from a cliff on Govardhan Hill, which at the time was higher than it is now. When he reached Braj and paid his obeisances to Rupan Sanatan, Krishna appeared to Sanatan Goswami in a dream and revealed to him that Raghunath is here to actually commit suicide. So Sanatan Goswami told him, I also wanted to commit suicide, throwing myself under the wheel of Jagannath's chariot. But Mahaprabhu told me if you could attain Krishna by committing suicide, I would have done it unlimited times. But that body is mine. I have so many things to do through your body. You cannot destroy your body, which is the temple of the Lord, in this way. So then Sanatan Goswami affirmed the gift and explained why Lord Gauranga gave to Raghunath Das Goswami his two most cherished possessions, Govardhan Shila and Gunjamala, representing Krishna and Radha. And Sanatan Goswami explained to him that this means you are to be the steward of Radha Kund and a resident of Govardhan. So he took up his residence there on the order of Sanatan Goswami. And Radha Kund became his shelter. And he would converse with her intimately, and she would respond. So in his Vilapa Krishnamanjali, this garland of lamentations offered to the lotus feet of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna for their pleasure and for the benefit of the devotees, first verse, he's speaking as a siddha, Rati Manjari, known as Tulsi Manjari amongst her close friends. So he's speaking in his siddha form as Rati Manjari, addressing his guru, who is Rupa Manjari, the leader and guru of all the Manjaris. And she's asking Rupa Manjari how perplexing this is, that although you're known as the most chaste lady, that somehow your lips are red like bimba fruits. How can this be? And this verse discloses the immaculate purity of the Manjari's love for Radha, marked by the defining characteristic that the Manjaris never desire personal connection with Krishna. They only desire to arrange for Radha to meet with Krishna. And when she does, and when her lips become red like Krishna's lips from their contact, that bimba fruit color immediately appears simultaneously and spontaneously on the lips of Tulsi Manjari. I mean Rupa Manjari. And Tulsi Manjari is commenting, this is so surprising, because we know you don't have contact with Krishna, And yet the evidence of that is there. The contact is by means of what Mahaprabhu explained as das, das, anudas. And Srila Prabhupada explained as 100 times removed is our contact with Krishna. However many intermediaries between us and Krishna, all the better. Because physical experience tells us that the further removed you are from the object of your pleasure, the less satisfaction you achieve. The spiritual reality is the opposite, that the more servants you have between yourself and Krishna, the more the pleasure is enhanced. And the mantra's only interest is to promote the union of their mistress with Krishna as evidence by the color of Radha's lips being touched by Krishna, and the same mark appears spontaneously on the lips of Rupa Manjari. She's experiencing. And even when Srimati Radharani appears to Rati Manjari, who is Raghunath Das Goswami in Chaitanya Leela, and asks, what blessing do you desire in your prayers and service to me? Do you want to become my friend? And Rati Manjari says, no. And Radha says, is that because you're just being humble? You'd rather be a maidservant than a friend to mine? And she says, no, it's not because I'm being humble. It's because I cherish tasting the sweetness of the Sakya's love for you, blended with the dasyam of being their maidservants. That blend is the experience I desire. So, Raghunath Das Goswami, taking up residence at Radhakund, where he lived for 50 years. And so he opens his Vilapa Krishnamanjali as his eternal ontological form in Krishna Lila, Rati Manjari, offering obeisances to his guru, Rupa Manjari. But then after a few verses, he is speaking from the identity of his sadhaka form, Raghunath Das Goswami, amongst the six Goswamis in the entourage of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And there, he offers his surrender to his guru, Jadunandanacharya, who lifted me out of the dry well of material existence with the ropes of his mercy and delivered me into the care of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who entrusted me to the shelter of Swarup Damodar. So from there, for most of the rest of the book, he's speaking as Raghunath Das Goswami. In his conversations with Radhakund, there are many intermingling dialogues. He would pray to Radhakund, Sri Sarovara, the lake who belongs to Sri and who is very dear to her, please reveal the pastimes of you and your beloved who sport on your shore. So then, in great yearning, Rati Manjari desires that her limbs be stamped with the emblems of the lotus feet of Sri Radha adorning the signature of Sri Krishna. Now, how is such an achievement possible? It was when Srimati Radharani, in a very demanding mood, insisted that Krishna adorn her lotus feet with that red lac. And immediately, Tulsi Manjari appears with a golden tray with the bowls of that red lac and the brushes for painting it. So Srimati Radharani places her lotus feet in Krishna's lap, and he begins anointing her lotus feet with that red lac. And then he begins to contemplate, I wish I could be so fortunate as to reside on the soles of her lotus feet. Then he considers, but I'm none different from my holy name. So then Krishna writes his holy name amongst the emblems on Srimati Radharani's lotus feet. He writes his holy name. And then Rati Manjari suddenly giggles and covers her face with her veil, and Srimati Radharani, she thinks there's a conspiracy between her and Krishna. She jumps up, and when she jumps up, she inadvertently kicks Rati Manjari in the arm, leaving the imprint of Krishna's signature embellished by the emblems of the soles of her lotus feet on Rati Manjari's arm. And she looks at it, and she vows that, I will never wash that arm. And then she goes and shows it off amongst her friends, because in the spiritual world, no one is envious. Everyone rejoices in the good fortune of others. So then, his meditation ends abruptly, and he reverts to his sadhaka form as the aged sannyasi on the bank of Radhakund, expressing his blossoming lamentations woven into a garland, awaiting the opportunity to offer them to the lotus feet of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. Now, after the disappearance of Sanatana Rupa Goswami, the fire of separation, which brought him to Braj in the first place, was burning more fiercely. And his only shelter was Radhakund. And he would pray to her so fervently, reveal to me. I mean, he was always having darshans of Radha and Krishna, but they were fleeting, and they were fleeting. He's yearning to be reinstated as the eternal companion of Radha and Krishna, while he's simultaneously aware of his remaining service to Mahaprabhu's mission, which is burdening his heart. So, and it's interesting to consider the way he words his aspirations and achievements. When will I attain whatever? He's already attained it. Why is he saying, when will I? Because that brings it within the reach of us, potentially. As in, when will I be delegated to take the sweets you cook to Mother Yashoda? This is when Srimati Radharani and Yavat is burning in the fire of separation from Krishna, imprisoned in the house of Jatila. And although her maidservants fan her and adorn her with sandalwood paste, which just, like with Mahaprabhu, it would just immediately dry. And they would make a bed of lotus flowers, which would just turn to dust from the heat of the fire of separation in her heart. But then she receives a message from Mother Yashoda to cook for Krishna. She jumps up, enters the kitchen, stokes all the fires, In the midst of all these blazing fires, she's cool as a lotus. And Ratimanjari, who's there with her, but expressing as a yearning, when will I, to bring it within the reach and the prospect of our yearning as well, to inspire us onward toward that ultimate goal and achievement. So, in meditation, Ratimanjari is alone with Radha in the kitchen, making sweets divided into two parts, one to send to Mother Jashoda, the other for their evening meeting with Krishna. And then Srimati Radharani, because she can't go to Nandagram because of social convention, she sends Ratimanjari and Kasturi Manjari, who's Jiva Goswami and Chaitanya Lila, to Nandagram, which is a long distance. But carried on a lotus of Braj's heart, these different petals can either expand into full-blown lotus position or close to bring the devotees on the different petals to the different regions on other petals, making a distance of 40 miles into 1,000 steps. So almost instantly they're at Nandagram. And the servant ushers them into Rohini's kitchen where she's cooking for Krishna. And Rohini Devi tells them, put the basket of sweets on the table. And then Mother Jashoda comes in and embraces them, looking with tear-filled eyes as she strokes their heads with great affection and asks, how is Srimati Radharani? And she places her forehead to theirs, and she holds their hands, and she tells that when I hold your hands, I feel like I'm holding Srimati Radharani's hand. And she asks, where are the sweets? And they're over there, Mata. They're cooked by Radha, which guarantees that whoever eats them will experience both their therapeutic and delicious effects and never know the calamities of old age or disease or misfortune or defeat. Thus, we call our princess Bhavya, auspicious. And hearing this, Mother Jashoda bursts into tears of love and embraces the girls, moistening them with her flowing milk. And the two Manjaris feel merged into the love of the Universal Mother. And they feel as much Mother Jashoda's daughters as is Radha in Mother Jashoda's own mind. And Mother Jashoda kisses them and tells them, had destiny awarded my desire to have Radha as a daughter-in-law, then you too would be living in my house with me. And then when his meditation ends, and he's again on the shore of Radhakund, he prays to Radha that I've lived here all these 50 years on the banks of your Kund and made it my home from which I can never leave. And this is the example of what Srila Prabhupada says, that in the liberated stage, which is after Anartha Nirvritti, a devotee yearns for a dear servant of Krishna whose example he can follow within his heart as a guide. For Raghunath Das Goswami, that perfected soul is Rupa Manjari or Rupa Goswami. And for those aspiring for service in the wake of the Sakis and Manjaris, which Radhakund offers, the perfection is Raghunath Das Goswami, our Prayojana Acharya. So finally, after much appeal and endeavor, Krishna appears to Raghunath Dattum, Raghunath Das Goswami, and asks him, how do you want to serve me? And he said, I want to serve your beloved. So Krishna says, so you're more interested in her than you are in me? He said, no, it's not like that at all. I know that your utmost pleasure is derived through her satisfaction. So Krishna asked, and how will you serve us? And he says, I will ensure that Radha is always favorable to you. I will massage your lotus feet. I will sing love songs for your pleasure. I will encourage you each to reveal your hearts to one another, and then he can't speak any further. And Krishna says, and what? And I will reveal your faults from her. And Krishna laughs joyfully and places his garland on Raghunath Das Goswami's neck. And then again, the darshan ends. And he's merged into deeper lamentation due to separation from the Lord and his associates. And in great fervor, he prays to Radhakund, if you do not now bestow your grace upon me, then what is the use of all these years of lamentations on the shore of your lake? And then Radhakund says, or Srimati Radharani says, but there's others who serve my lake as well. Why do you think that your fortune should be exceptional? And he said, that's my point exactly. Because in serving your kund, I have renovated the lake, made steps so that pilgrims can bathe very conveniently, embellished your shore with gardens and kunjas, built bhajan kutirs for sadhus, faithfully observed Baholastami, regularly performed parikrama and bathe three times a day. And if, in response to this service, you fail to bestow your grace upon me, my concern is for all the other devotees. How will they have faith in Rupa Goswami's words that residence on the shore of Radhakund is the supreme perfection in all existence? So, at this time, in the life of Raghunath Das Goswami, on the shore of Radhakund, it's getting late, the sun is setting, darkness sets in, the birds cease from singing, there's no sound but the gentle waves lapping on the shore of Radhakund, and even that begins to fade as the wind settles into stillness. As night sets in, and then Raghunath Das Goswami hears the sound of ankle bells moving in the rhythm of dancing feet. A golden effulgence engulfs his bhajan kutir. Radha and Krishna appear at his doorstep. And in words that are sweeter than nectar, they tell him, now in his perfected form, Tulsi Manjari, we are here for you. And then he says, he concludes by placing the garland of my lamentation at your lotus feet, I pray that they will be pleasing to you and nourishing to your devotees. At that point, the ecstasy of separation in the heart of Raghunath Das Goswami had reached the point of final perfection, which is casting off this mortal form. And he entered into his eternal residence on the shore of Radhakund. where he serves eternally as Ratimanjari, while also in another sadhaka form as Raghunath Das Goswami, the eternal resident of Radhakund, manifest during his Prakat Lila, unmanifest afterwards, but eternally present on the shore of Radhakund. And sadhakas who very faithfully and sincerely follow the regulative principles can someday hear the verses of his lamentations, which he offers to the lotus feet of Radha and Krishna for their pleasure and for the benefit of all the sadhakas who want to know what is that siddha, what is that sadhya, what is that perfection we aspire to achieve at the culmination of our devotional service in this world. So tonight, it is the custom, devotees gather here, very few devotees, who want to bathe in Radhakund. Whether you take 3 drops upon your head or whatever, approach with utmost reverence and sobriety. Offer your prayers to Radhakund. Take 3 drops of water upon your head. And whether mentally or physically you enter into the water, understand that what you're doing, what you're participating in, is that element that is essential for all of us to maintain our vows and devotional service throughout however many lifetimes it takes to achieve that goal. And that quality which sustains our hearts for the long run is a feeling of reciprocation from Sri Guru and Gauranga. And Sri Gauranga is Radha and Krishna. So as we bathe the deities of Radha and Krishna on their appearance days in Panchamrita, which means the 5 nectars of our faith, affection, service, prayer, and longing, on Bahulastami, Radha and Krishna reciprocate by bathing their devotees in the nectar of their love. So we will resume just before midnight for anyone who is so inclined. Thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments?
You mentioned that the perfection is to...
All I can see is the sun. Is the sun speaking? Or?
Rahu might be speaking. One of the perfections is to be far removed from Krishna or Radha in a service. The servant of the servant of the servant. How does one practically appreciate that in our sadhaka form, when our sadhaka performance, when we see that it appears to us that it is not as pleasing as serving the guru directly, or not as pleasing as serving some advanced devotee directly, where you have to serve the servant of the servant of the servant.
That is the role of faith. Surya's question, as far as I can tell, was, how is it that we taste the nectar of serving guru when that service becomes extended through the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant, and we're not feeling the same sweetness and reciprocation? And that is the role of faith, the assurance of all that is hoped for and the conviction of what is yet unseen. And by faith and gratitude, we are united with the goal even before we actually achieve it. And Srila Prabhupada so many times throughout his books, after describing various leelas, states various slight variations of the same principle. Anyone who hears with faith and affection this pastime will achieve this blessing. So anyone who serves the servants of the servants with faith and affection will realize that that is the most pleasing form of serving Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. So if the sweetness and reciprocation is not so apparent as it was during Srila Prabhupada's manifest lila, it's an indication that we have to deepen our faith and affection and strive more to qualify further to realize that that connection is eternal. Anything else? Everybody's turning, pointing to Surya again. Banu Nandini means the daughter of the sun. Rishi Banu Nandini, daughter of the sun. All I can see is the golden effulgence, but I'm hearing. Faith, affection, prayer, longing, surrender. Thank you. Anything else? Everybody's pointing to Surya again. I can't see anything but effulgence, but I can hear.
In the beginning, Maharaj, I kind of missed it. What were you saying? How is Karthik relating to controlling the speech? Can you repeat the question?
Raju's question is, what is the relationship we discussed in the beginning about Kartik and controlling speech? This was in relation to Urja Vrata, the vows we take for Kartik to maximize the benefits. Urja means the queen of Krishna's pastime potencies, Srimati Radharani, the predominating deity of this month, the month of Damodar, whose queen is Radha, whose grace is most profusely showered upon devotees during this month. In reciprocation to our Urjavrata, the vows, the intentions we make for her pleasure. Now, since this talk is based on Srila Rupa Goswami's Upadeshamrita, which culminates in the 11th verse in the glories of Radha Kund, the first verse of his composition is, it's not intended as such, but it serves very well as a general outline of the principles we should incorporate in our Urjavrata. He says, Vachavegam, one who controls the urges of speech and the other urges. Vachavegam, controlling speech. Manasavegam, controlling the mind. Krodavegam, controlling anger. This is it's not intended as such, but it serves well as a general outline or format for what our vows should be for Kartik. Vachavegam, controlling the tongue. During Kartik, we should not waste this precious time in Gramyakata or any talks not directly related to devotional service. Manasavegam, controlling the mind. Keep the mind fixed on the virtues of this month in achieving the blessings of Srimati Radharani, and not let the mind wander into other areas. In Krodhavegam especially, control the anger and passions, that you not speak or behave or interact in any way displeasing to Srimati Radharani. It's a very general guideline, but within that, the specific activities for the month, of course, Dhamma Dharastakam, rising early, Brahma Muhurta, chanting your rounds, attentive morning program, serving the devotees, contemplating Krishna's Damodar Lila, which is so sweet, because, you know, everyone loves Ram Lila, which is very perplexing, because it's just continual pain and anguish. So why are we so attached? You cannot put the book down. Just ever-increasing pain, misery, and anguish, culminating in Sita Devi just unable to endure it any longer, and the earth opens up, Bhumi rises up, takes her by the hand onto her palanquin, and takes her down into the earth, and then Lord Ram, in a rage, is ready to shoot Bhumi, his own mother-in-law. It's like just intensive grief from beginning to end. Why can't you put the book down? Because there's joy within the grief. The joy in hearing and knowing that the Lord never forsakes his lost servant and will build a bridge to any magnitude to reach that lost part and parcel. But what I'm getting at is, for Lord Ram, amongst the different sources of anguish is not feeling that he could reciprocate with those monkeys and bears who sacrificed so much to return Sita. He felt that he never reciprocated. So in Damodar Lila, he is personally, with his own lotus hand, feeding the monkeys to complete what was unfinished in Ram Lila. Very sweet, very satisfying, and very deep, if you really want to contemplate the profound mysteries and theology within this sweet pastime of stealing butter, which means stealing our hearts and tying, binding, allowing himself to be bound by his servant. And observing the festivals, the prominent festivals of Kartik, like Balastami, today, tonight, Diwali, the day that he stole the butter, but also the day that Ram returned Ayodhya. Therefore, to find everything illumined. And being very diligent in your dealings with devotees to enhance their Krishna consciousness, especially during this month, at all times, especially this month. Any other questions or comments?
Can you explain again? I must have missed it. What the connection is between that cow Bahula and Radha Kun? Somehow, can you repeat the question?
Once again, Surya is speaking. All I can see is the golden effulgence and hearing the voice. Very appropriate. Most endearing name is Vrishabhanu Nandini, which means the moon-like daughter of the sun. In the dynasty of the sun, Srila Rupa Goswami sings, a full moon has arisen. So somehow or other, can't see anything but golden effulgence hearing these voices from the sun. The question is the connection between the cow, Bahula, and the name of the festival tonight, Bahulastami. Srimati Radharani is known for her extensive, sweet love for her relatives, her friends, her cows, and the devotees. The festival is named after Bahula, a cow who was caught alone by a hungry tiger who wanted to eat her. And she surrendered to her fate, but made the request that he allow her to return to say goodbye to her sisters, the other cows, her cowherd man, and her calf, and to feed her calf one last time. So the cow was so touched that he granted that consent. But when she confided in her calf, her sisters, and the cowherd man, they said, we'll all go to be eaten by the tiger. They wouldn't let her go alone. So when the tiger saw Bahula returning with her sisters, the other cows, with her calf, with her cowherd man, and this one other cowherd boy that the tiger had never seen before, and was so satisfied in seeing this cowherd boy named Gopal, he no longer had any interest in eating Bahula. And he just told them all, go in peace. Bless you. So Bahula is taken as the emblem of truthfulness because she kept to her word. She came back to forfeit her life. But Krishna not only protected her, he blessed the tiger as well. So, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and it's actually just after Uddhava speaks Srimad Bhagavatam on the banks of Kushim Sarovara for Krishna's queens, and Maharaj Pariksit was there at the beginning, so eager to hear Srimad Bhagavatam from Uddhava. But Uddhava told him, your time for hearing Bhagavatam is not now, because Kali is invading and he will disrupt any spiritual devotional activity if you're not vigilant to protect the devotees. So Maharaj Pariksit was devastated. He was so close to Krishna after last seeing him in the womb that he could practically touch him. Now he's being dispatched by Uddhava to hunt down the devil. But Uddhava reassures him, no, you'll hear Srimad Bhagavatam soon enough. This narration is meant for the queens. The narration to which your name will be connected will be for the benefit of the world. So with that assurance, he rode off, vigilant for the appearance of Kali. And where did he find him? Attacking Bhumi and Dharma. When Dharma only had one hoof left on the earth, truthfulness. The last leg of religion. And since Bahula represents that principle of truthfulness. Srimati Radharani was pleased to name the festival of the appearance of her kund, not different from herself, after the emblem of truthfulness, Bahula, the cow. So it goes by the name Radha Kundastami or Bahulastami, of which the second is foremost. Anything else? Thank you all very much. Shri Bahulastami ki jai, Shri Radha Gopinath ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Nitai Gaur Premanandi.
Prasada Swami Maharaj ki jai.
Thank you.